Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and I'll be talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. You are listening to another episode of Who's Reading the Organon, and we will start today with a few inspirational quotes and tweets that we get each day when we're on Twitter. Well, the first one is kind of funny. It's Steve Stuff says, "As you get older, three things happen. The first is your memory goes, and then, oh, shucks." This is a quote and humor. You know what that means. We do lose our memory, and then we go to a room to look for something, and we forgot what we went for. So Eugene12 has a lot of followers, so what he writes gets retweeted quite often, and he says, "Believe in yourself. If you don't, then no one else will have a reason to," by John Lennon. And that was retweeted by quite a few people. Eugene12 also says, "There is no harm in repeating a good thing." And that was a quote from Plato. So I wonder how that transfers over to our study of the Organon about repeating remedies. I'll give you a couple of other people. Are you on air, Vera?
Yes, I am, and I'm smiling about
You're
repeating
smiling.
Remedies, about repeating experiments.
I'm going to repeat that one. There is no harm in repeating a good thing. And you know what? When we talk to each other, maybe that's okay to say I love you and say it again and again. But when we're talking about remedies, we have a different form of action. So it depends on how it's repeated, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And also, one of the most interesting definitions of insanity I've heard is to repeat the same thing over and over again and expect different results.
Oh,
like if you're doing something that's not working, just to keep doing exactly the same thing over and over and over again and expect maybe this time it will work.
Correct. Like getting into a relationship that's not exactly working and you then get into a new one, which is exactly the same type of pattern. So,
Or giving a remedy which isn't working.
Uh-huh. Which is not working and saying, well, it didn't work this time, let's try it again.
Yeah.
Or should I give you any more? Here's one from Wolfgang von Goethe, who says, this is a quote that Ken Henderson wrote on Twitter, "He who moves not forward goes backwards." Ha, huh. That means that you're not really standing still in one place, but you're actually moving either forwards or backwards. It's a very dynamic kind of quote, isn't it?
I suppose you can land up in a strange physical truth depending on the spin of the planet, that there are certain situations you can be in where if you're not moving forward, the planet is rotating you backward.
Yes. Well, I suppose in physical space, perhaps, yes. And perhaps in, you know, it's like when you're treading water. You're treading water, and you have to keep paddling. You have to keep doing something to move forward just to stay in one place. But if you're not even doing the paddling, you might be drifting backward or sinking or something.
Unless you're in the Dead Sea, which has its own mechanism.
You have a lot of salt in there to keep you buoyant.
Yeah, so natural muriaticum works every time.
Yes, it does. It lifts you up. So are we ready to move forward? Wait, one more thing.
Yes.
I wanted to mention a couple of discussions or blogs that are on Homeopathy World Community that are getting a lot of action. One is the Boninghouse and his TPB, his pocketbook, and that was put up there by Dr. Wakar, and there is a lot of activity on that blog. And then you put up a new one, Vera, called What Translation of the Organon Do You Recommend? I don't know how many people have commented on that so far.
I don't think anyone has, except I've had a comment from Dr. Gary Weaver that that Dudgeon is possibly the best translation to work from. But that was in a different conversation.
Okay, so we'll have to take a look at that. And I thank you for putting that up, and maybe this will stimulate some comments. I'm ready to go into the Organon today.
Okay, here we go, taking the Organon off the shelf and dusting it off. Aphorism 254 we're starting with now. There's a collection of aphorisms now, which are really quite interesting, as is the whole thing. We talked yesterday about how we expect some kind of mental and emotional improvement when someone's taking a remedy, and we certainly don't expect them to get down and miserable. It's a sign that a remedy is not the best choice, or possibly being given in too high a dose. In 254, Hanuman is kind of summarizing that and leading us into a whole new area which some of us are very familiar with from practice. I'm reading from Berica as usual. The other new or increased symptoms, or on the contrary, the diminution of the original ones without any addition of new ones, will soon dispel all doubts from the mind of the attentively observing and investigating practitioner with regard to the aggravation or amelioration. Though there are among patients persons who are either incapable of giving an account of this amelioration or aggravation, or are unwilling to confess it. Seen those? The ones who say, no, I'm not feeling any better, absolutely not feeling any better, and you ask them, and you find they are feeling better, or they come in looking much better, and they say, nope, it wasn't your remedy isn't helping. Have you heard that one, Debbie?
All the time. But then you go back, and you he's going to give us a hint on what to do next, and this is something that I do. I do review, start asking, well, how is that headache, or how do you still have insomnia, or how is your appetite doing? And when they then reflect back, they might notice, oh, yeah, that changed and that changed. So you do hear it once you bring it into their awareness.
Mm-hmm. Let's read aphorisms 255 and 256, and those kind of encircle this whole subject. In 250, and remember also we're talking about those who are incapable of giving an account or unwilling to confess. There's actually two levels there. 255,
okay.
But even with such individuals, we may convince ourselves on this point by going with them through all the symptoms enumerated in our notes of the disease one by one and finding that they complain of no unusual symptoms in addition to these, and that none, if this be the case, and if an improvement in the disposition and mind have already been observed, the medicine must have effected positive diminution of the disease, or if sufficient time have not yet elapsed for it, it will soon effect it. If now the improvement delay too long in making its appearance, this depends either on some error of conduct on the part of the patient or on other interfering circumstances. So this is the situation. There's no new unusual symptoms. None of the old symptoms are worse. And there's an improvement in the disposition and mind. But let's see the other situation in 256. On the other hand, if the patient mentions the occurrence of...
I'm sorry. Are you still there, Vera? No, you disappeared for a moment. Repeat that 256.
I was just in my alternative universe. I'll come back. On the other hand, If the patient mentions the occurrence of some fresh accidents and symptoms of importance, signs that the medicine chosen has not been strictly homeopathic, even though he should good-naturedly assure us that he feels better, as is not infrequently the case in physical patients, anyone can pronounce that word, with lung absence, we must not believe this assurance, but regard his status aggravated, as it will soon be perfectly apparent it is. The person is feeling worse. He's got fresh accidents, symptoms of importance, but he wants to please us. And he's very good-natured, and he wants us to feel good. And he says, I'm feeling better. Yes, I really think I'm feeling better. And we see him, Yeah, you've seen that.
Are you saying that's not correct? Is that what you're saying? He's just appeasing the homeopath?
Sometimes it's appeasing the homeopath. Sometimes I find there's an expression, if there are any Brits listening to this, when you ask a Brit, how are you doing? The Brit will say, certainly in the older generations, they'll say, mustn't grumble. Have you ever heard that one, Debbie? Mustn't grumble. Maybe in India they say this as well. I don't know.
I have no idea, but I think it's maybe that superstition, you know, you shouldn't, or holding back on something. I don't, you know, there are probably cultural norms that it's like complaining. And the first thing that it says in this 256 is from the Kunsley translation, it says, on the other hand, if the patient complains of some significant new symptoms. So in order not to be a complainer, so that might give you a hint. I want to mention Ingrid from the HWC says on the chat, people not acknowledging that they get better because they are occupied by their now active layer of illness. So something has changed, maybe, with what she's indicating.
That's interesting. I find what I've seen, though, is that there are some people who get into like almost a competition with a homeopath, a test. It's like, if I admit I am feeling better, I have admitted that you have the ability to help me feel better. And especially this is true with people who did not come because they themselves wanted to, but they were talked into it by someone else.
Right. Yeah, like the husband or somebody. Yeah. It's always that. Or the child. Also, Ingrid says, mostly patients are often surprised when you read them the symptom list of the last consultation, as they already forgot how they were. The natural state of health is like waking from a bad dream. The dream disappears quickly. Yes, that is quite true.
Absolutely,
you know,
correct.
Kind of, you forget what was, you know, painful, discomforting. You know, you don't really want to remember that. And so it just kind of disappears.
Sometimes I wonder, there was a discussion on Minutus about this years ago, where someone was asking, why is it that people forget so quickly? And I've noticed when I've spoken to people, they'll say, I went to a homeopath years ago. When they find out I'm a homeopath, they'll say, I went to a homeopath years ago, and I'll ask, did it help? And they said, yes, actually, it helped tremendously. And do you still use homeopathy? No. Mm-hmm. And very often it's like people, and who was the homeopath? I've forgotten. What was the complaint? Often they've forgotten that as well. It's almost like a deliberate forgetfulness. And I remember one commenter on this discussion said that people forget because the world isn't ready for homeopathy.
Well, you know what? This just reminds me of our humor. The very first thing we said, as you get older, three things happen. The first is your memory goes, and then, oh, shucks, I don't remember anything yet, the rest. So, you know, I really think that there is so much synchronicity to the messages that we receive each day and how it formulates and integrates into the aphorism at hand. it's very humorous.
There's an example, though, of being able to tell and how you can tell when someone's improving or not. I found, first of all, I don't know if anyone else has seen this, that this is a typical characteristic of many sepia patients, that that they will say they're not improving. And okay. I know now if I've given sepia and the patient says they're not improving, I have to calm down, take it slowly, take them through the entire questionnaire, symptom after symptom. But in this particular case, there was a girl that I was treating. I think she was 19 or 20, young woman. And she was saying that she was not interested in men, that they were nasty, smelly creatures like her brothers, right? Something uh-huh. along those lines. And when she came back afterwards, she seemed much improved. The main complaint was, I think, stomach ache, something like that. And the interesting thing was she seemed more positive about men. And she said her brothers have been improving lately. She thinks that's why they're behaving better. And afterwards, uh-huh. the mother took me aside and said, actually, the brothers are saying that she is so much nicer to them.
Mm-hmm. So it's always that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's complex yes. because her report was it wasn't helping.
Right. Well, one of the things that you just brought up was the issue of you're thinking the other person in your relationships in your life are improving. They're getting better. But it's mm-hmm. not really always them. It's your perspective of what they are saying, doing, and acting. And all of a sudden, as you dynamically change your perspective of the other, then they also respond likewise. So it is an interaction. And it may not be recognizable to the patient who has had a remedy that's acting well. Ingrid is making another mention on the chat. She says, I do not remember the paragraph, but Hahnemann makes a remark about the natural state of health that makes you forget your symptoms quickly. So even in, we don't know where it's written in Hahnemann's Organon or elsewhere, he also comes to the same conclusion. And she says it is our natural state of being healthy and go after our spiritual goal. Illness is a deviation that disappears out of the consciousness as our goal is more important. Really, isn't this beautiful? Because we do are able to fulfill our potential and our purpose in life when we do not feel any of this disorders, whether it's blocks or feeling stuck or helpless or any of those other discomforts that prevent us from being mm-hmm. who we really are.
Well, I think also, first of all, it bounces us straight back to aphorism number 9, which I'll just read briefly if that's okay with you, Debbie.
I love it.
In the healthy condition of man, the spiritual vital force, the dynamis that animates the material body, rules with unbounded sway and retains all the parts of the organism in admirable, harmonious, vital operation as regards both sensations and functions, so that our indwelling, reason-gifted mind can freely employ this living, healthy instrument for the higher purposes of our existence. To some extent, also from Ingrid's comments and from the discussion, it seems to emerge that actually feeling a complaint is in itself a level of disease. A preoccupation yeah. with once I had this and I had headaches and I had stomach aches and I had this, even if you no longer have them, if you mm-hmm. still have them in mind, then actually you mm-hmm. still have them.
It sounds very nature myriadicum to me, looking at the past.
Yes, and dwelling.
You know, always dwelling on the past, yes. But mm-hmm. I'm sure that there are many other remedies which have complaint. We could actually look up in the rubrics complaining to see mm-hmm. what's listed. But not to be so specific, we can go back to our aphorisms and continue the discussion.
Well, I have another question. I wonder if anyone has any suggestions, if you have any suggestions, Debbie. And the question is, since I brought it up within this context, how do you deal with a patient who is reluctant to come to you and has been forced to come to you by his mother, his wife, his mother-in-law? Usually the women are the ones who send the men. Or a girl, like I had a girl coming to me who, even though the remedies were helping her, she was very reluctant because she didn't want to come and her mother made her. Okay. Any suggestions on how to deal with these patients?
Well, I have a way that I do it, and I don't know what you say or others, but I say that it is the free will of a person to come. So if the person is not willing to be a participant in this process, I say when they're ready, bring them back. So it's not something – I want to be on a good platform with the person who comes in. I say if they want to try it and, you know, you're willing to try it, okay, I'm willing to see you. But if you just don't want to be here, I'm not here to force you to be here.
Mm-hmm. I find that they do, like, especially when it's kids or teenagers, older teenagers, that's like an example. And the parents are sending for a physical complaint, but they're very often hoping for change in behavior as well. I find that they will come. If they come and sit there, it means that they are sort of okay with coming. They're not abusive, but they are withdrawn. They're kind of not cooperative.
And, well, to me, that's a message.
My assumption in dealing with it is that it will take a little time. And I need to show them, one of the things I find, at least with teenagers, is that they hate being pigeonholed. They hate it when someone says, oh, well, you're like this and like this and like this. So I find sometimes just asking questions or not making any assumptions or even making the first session very short can help.
To me, if a person is that glum and not interacting and really not working with you, I would not expect them to come back or to be a participant with me. And Ingrid seems to say the same thing. She says she would like their free will to be there. Now, if there is a child who is constantly contrary and they have some kind of a physical ailment and you can deal with them on an acute level, like the mother calls frantically that they have strep throat or something like that, and then you apply the acute remedy in the situation, then there's improvement. That's how you can win someone over. And then the child automatically comes back and says, Mom, do you have any more of that whatever? Because it really worked the last time. Mm-hmm. But in a teenage situation, I think that they have to be ready. And as an educator, which I am, there's a point of readiness. And I will wait for that point of readiness. And when it gets desperate enough, they usually are willing to try just about anything. Like if they have horrid acne or depression or something of that sort, they're really willing for help at that point.
Well, I'm slightly different in the way I approach it because I believe that the interaction between the homeopath and the patient is part of the readiness. I mean, obviously, no one comes to me in shackles, but if a parent is bringing a teenager and the teenager has to have agreed not to be dragged kicking and screaming,
right.
I find that to try and reduce the length of the appointment, not to ask too many questions, not to be invasive, and to get as much information as I can from the parent, and to see if I'm able to prescribe on that basis. If I'm not, then to arrange another appointment and allow the getting to know you process come gradually, not to try and crack the nut first. And what I found actually, a reluctant adult patient who comes, if he's not helped immediately and doesn't develop an immediate rapport despite his initial ante, he will usually not stay.
Right.
If he develops a rapport in a first meeting and a first meeting isn't too invasive, he'll usually stay and check it out and see and start entering the process. But I suppose rule of thumb for me is that when the patient is reluctant to go slowly, not to be too invasive, to allow the person to get to know you very much as is not intended whatever, very much as when you meet a strange child or a strange animal, you don't immediately go all over them. You give them a little time. You give them a little distance and space and allow the process of getting to know them happen.
Okay, and here's a little point of interest from Ingrid Wara again. Mm-hmm. She says the consultation with the parents first makes a smooth consultation with the child. So this really harkens back to what we said at the very beginning, that the dynamics of the individual, how they're looking at each other, their perspective. So if you're able, and this is something that I also do also, I recommend having, even though the parent is calling for the child, I say I think it would be really good if the parent has a consultation. And so starting the change in dynamics from the adult perspective, from the parent, who then can maybe interact differently with the child, and the child sees the change in the parent through this process of healing, that could open up the door for the child to say, yes, I am now willing to come in.
One reservation about that. I have usually a phone consultation with a parent when the parent is deciding whether to bring the child in. But I prefer not to see the parents actually before the child. Prefer to see the parents with the child, because very often what I see is not necessarily what the parents report. Now, I find this is chronic with parents of children who the system is pushing them to take Ritalin. Now, the pros and cons of Ritalin is not the subject I want to discuss. We have very little time left. But what happens often with these parents, when the children are very young, when they're 5 or 6, the parents come in telling me that the children are dumb. The children are thick. They are not intelligent.
Uh-huh.
Now, in those cases, I need to see the child as quickly as possible, because I need not to absorb any of the prejudice of the parents. I need to develop my own observations. So a separate consultation with the parents is valid and can be valuable, and it's something that I do a lot, whether in person or over the phone. But preferably to see the child as quickly as possible so that you can develop your own conclusion.
Well, that is really a beautiful approach, very unbiased. The last thing is that Ingrid says we need to be humble in that respect, to accept that we may not be the perfect healer for the reluctant grown-up right now. So there are a lot of answers and a lot of perspectives on how to deal with the reluctant patient and the disgruntled child. There's all sorts of types that we need to learn how to approach and be open to what is coming to us, and how do we handle each of those different types of personalities.
Mm-hmm. And
so,
sometimes
I
just want to acknowledge that comment, that sometimes we are not the right homeopath. They need to be going to someone they have better chemistry with. And sometimes homeopathy is not the best modality. They need something with touch. They need something else. So it is very fluid. It's dynamic. But that's a very good comment. In general, very helpful comments during the session.
Okay, so how about an overall umbrella statement? We have a few seconds left to the end of the show. So what does this say to us? We are dynamic individuals, and we must be very observant. This is one of his main things. Observe the patient on the second consultation.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you say?
to some extent, it's almost trust no one. Trust nothing
trust
but
no
your observation and your investigation. If the patient says they're feeling better, you have to double check, are they really improving? If the patient says they're feeling worse, you have to double check, are they really feeling worse? And another aspect here also, which Hanuman mentions earlier, we also should check with those around the patient to get some impression from them if they perceive the patient as being better or worse.
Okay, well, I'm going to close by saying overcoming doubt through observation. And then I'm going to close. Okay? Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.